This is a show about possibilities. Stop running from the negatives. Start focusing on the positives. Manage the unmanageable. Let Dan help. This is the Thank You Dan Show with Alex. Now, here's Dan Gasby.
Welcome back to the Thank You Dan
and Alex Show.
We are delighted today to have on this show one of the preeminent doctors, TV personalities, and I must say, having been on the show a couple of times, all around good guys, Dr. Oz.
Well, Dan, right back at you. Thank you for your kind words. I must say, I'm still getting goosebumps from the conversation we had. Just in the show we recorded. It's remarkable to see people who have real grit, who have resilience, who've been able to find their way through life, through ups and downs. So kudos to you, and I'm looking forward to spending a lot more time with you talking about it.
Well, we appreciate it. And, you know, what was so remarkable about that show that we did record was that it was the first time that both Alex and I had a chance to talk intimately about why we're doing what we're doing and where we want to go. And so, you know, I don't have to tell you, we've been under intense criticism, and we've had people call us from all over the world because of what we're doing, how we're doing it.
Yes, and thank you again, Dr. Oz, for inviting us. It was a really wonderful experience for me to meet you for the first time. And I also wanted to congratulate you on your 10th anniversary of the Dr. Oz Show, which is a big deal. It's been a wonderfully successful show. And I was thinking about it, and I thought to myself, what made you want to become a doctor?
I remember when I was 7 years old, and my dad took me into an ice cream shop. My father's a physician, so that's part of why I was biased. But this conversation was one I still recall because he asked me what I wanted to be. And I was thinking about the answer, and there was a kid in front of us in line at the ice cream store who was about 10, so he's 3 years older than me. And this kid said, well, I haven't decided yet. I'm only 10. I don't know what I want to be. And so the kid got his ice cream, moved on, and our turn came. My dad looked at me and said, I never want to hear that answer. You can change your mind if you want, but I want you to pick something, aim at it, and if you decide not to do it or you miss or whatever, then you can course correct. So I told him I wanted to be a doctor, and I never changed my mind. And there are many reasons why I continued along that path, but if I hadn't aimed at it, maybe I wouldn't have been there. I mean, I always wanted to be an athlete, you know, a professional athlete. I played football in college. I really thought that that would give me ultimate fulfillment. I wasn't good enough, P.S., like most people aren't. But I also began to realize that my true interest was understanding the human body, not just when it's sick, but actually when it functions correctly. And I also was fascinated that I would never truly understand everything about illness, which is a wonderful advantage in medicine because it keeps you curious. You can never be good enough. No matter how perfectly you did the operation, and I'm a heart surgeon, so there are lots of steps to what I do. Right. No matter how well I think I did it. I mean, I can give you myself rotator cuff injuries, patting myself on the back. but it doesn't matter because I know there's always something I could have done better.
Right.
And that's a good career path for anybody trying to figure out what they want to do. Make sure you don't do something you know you can do perfectly. Do something you know you have to spend your whole life assuming and attempting to do perfectly, because you're not supposed to touch the North Star. You're supposed to aim at it.
That's a great story.
That's also a great story to share for our younger listeners, you know, to have a goal in mind. It always helps. And then how did the Dr. Oz Show get started on TV?
What a beginning, like many that happened in life. You don't really appreciate it as you're going through it. But I had done a show for Discovery Channel with my wife, Lisa. And she's a producer. Those Visine commercials you may remember from years back, where the eyes were bloodshot and they would clear up. Those are her eyes.
Wow.
So she understood television. I didn't. Right. And her vision board included the idea that some of the things I was learning about in the hospital, like the fact that I didn't have to actually open your chest with a bandsaw. In fact, you could avoid the need for surgery completely oftentimes if you just took some proactive steps. So with those biases in mind, I began making a little bit of television. and ultimately hosted a show on the Discovery Channel that Lisa was executive producer of, and my first guest was Oprah.
Amazing.
And I didn't have any idea if she'd like me, if she'd like a topic, if... Frankly, she probably should never have done the show. She only did it because Gail King, who's a mutual friend of ours, insisted on it.
Yeah.
But we ended up hitting it off. And I think part of it was my fascination that she was such a good teacher. Because of all the things you can say about Oprah, and there are many platitudes you can offer, the one that I would think she would treasure the most is she's a great teacher. So she knew how to get people to think differently about the world. I had some insights about what they should think about. And after we did the show together, she invited me back to her program, and we ended up doing probably 80 shows together.
That's amazing.
And that called that Oprah University. And over the course of those 5-6 years, I learned a lot about how to talk to America about stuff that can be challenging, like how do you get better from illness, and how do you stay well, and how do you make it fun to do those things so you truly have the grit and desire you want in life as an attribute that helps you control your destiny. And when we launched the show 10 years ago, I tried to capture all of those moments and make sure that people could taste them every single day.
Well, you know, that's an amazing story in and of itself. I don't know if you know, but I worked for King World and was part of that group that originally launched Oprah, Wheel, Fortune, Jeopardy back in the day. And the one thing that I can truly say about Oprah is that, as well as what you just said about her being a great teacher, mm-hmm. I mean, she's an unbelievable communicator. I mean, she knows how to take words and visualize them to people that you can almost taste them or you can feel them. And that was what struck me about her. You said something very important that relates to what we did on your show. And that was that whole thing about, you know, seeking the North Star, not being comfortable in what you're doing. And that's why it was so important for Alex and I to be on that show. And even though we've suddenly taken a lot of criticism for our relationship and for what we've done, I didn't want to be comfortable. Alex could have easily not been involved. But I made a promise to my wife to tell our story. And that's not comfortable things to do because you have to talk about warts and all. We wrote a book about that as you chronicled it and highlighted it on your show.
Yep.
And so I'm especially pleased that we had this opportunity to tell people why Alex and I are together, to live through what our family is going through, and how important it is that ultimately bring awareness to Alzheimer's.
Well, what you've done, I think, is to force people to think differently about taking care of others. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, a good number of us, estimated to be at least a third, will develop Alzheimer's. There's many other critical illnesses we'll develop. You told a very gripping story during the interview. I think it's airing Tuesday, by the way, so everyone can see it. But you mentioned the fact that, you know, we're still healthy, but we're just not disabled yet. And when you look at the burden to caregivers and how much they suffer, the reality is, becoming more apparent to everybody, that we have to develop better strategies to keeping those folks healthy. And one of the things they need and crave is relationship. And so when Bea was no longer the Bea that you married and loved, you still love her, but you still need companionship in life. So when you think that we'll do our part, until death does us apart, that phrase is so important. And it's meant spiritually, but in your moment-to-moment lives, you need to find a path to staying alive so you can oblige that. And I think you're showing us that there's some brave moves that can get you there. And I completely understand why people are upset, but I think a lot of people who are angry don't really understand the difficult decisions you have to make and how much of a soul gut-wrenching decision process it was for you, the amount of pain it took. And, you know, thankfully, Alex came into your life, so there was somebody that you could share this burden with, but also jointly it will help serve B better.
Well, you know, you nailed it, Doctor. I mean, she has been, look, I can say this, and we talked about this. I was going down the drain. I was sitting there with a woman who I had no conversation with, no communications. She was a 69-year-old toddler, like a 4-year-old. And it caused me to start to eat poorly, drink more. I gained 30 pounds, and I had resigned myself at that point to basically, you know, I'm just going to go on autopilot and taking care of her and let and let what will be happen. And she overheard my conversation about me being lonely by chance in a restaurant and having had the same experience dealing with her father and some issues. She called me and just said hi, and if you ever want to talk, and that led to a friendship. There was no intimacy or relationship even thought of for months and months and months. Right.
Yes. But you know, Dan, from the time we met, and Dr. Oz, that's what I've always admired about Dan. From the moment I met him, he was always honest with me. He never hid anything from me. You know, he laid everything out and he let me know what's going on in his life. And I realized, you know, there is no Dan without B. And so I knew exactly what the situation was like. Not, however, I had to learn about a lot to learn about Alzheimer's and what it really looks like on an everyday basis and so forth. But Dan's honesty and his dedication to B and taking care of her really touched my heart.
It was unbelievable to find someone that understood I'm out there alone with someone. And that's the toughest thing in the world. It's easy to be, so much easier to be by yourself, than to be two as almost none. And that two is one. You know, when it's right, two people together can be greater than the sum. But when it's wrong, or when someone doesn't have a brain and speak, please speak to, you know, what neurodegenerative diseases are. I mean, it's the most humbling, frustrating thing for the caregiver.
Yes.
Well, neurodegenerative disorders are the most difficult, I find, for us to cope with, because the person's there in some ways and not in others, and you can't tell the difference sometimes. I mean, if someone breaks their leg, you know what parts of them are working, what parts aren't. With a neurodegenerative disorder, especially with something like Alzheimer's, you can't tell how much of it is because they don't understand. They understand, but they can't act. They understand it can act, but don't do the right thing. There are different kinds of the of problems, even in Alzheimer's. Some of them affect part of the cortex that controls your impulse moves, so you start doing things that you didn't want to do. And a lot of Americans have fallen out with their families because their loved ones started acting weirdly and they couldn't figure it out.
Absolutely.
It turned out that there was an illness that was causing it. So the stories that we're hearing are getting more and more painful, in part because technology has advanced so much that you don't die of a heart attack at 45. You don't die of cancer.
These people
the first
live
time
longer.
You get one anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So all these other illnesses that we're getting ahead of because we've studied them and spent time on them are falling up to the sides. And now we're left with problems of the brain, which is the most complicated organ, obviously.
Right.
It's amazing that what you just said, I mean, the very things that are giving us more longevity is also causing us to have more anxiety and financial impacts over the course of one's lifetime. You know as well as we know, most people don't realize that the stress on the caregiver, in many cases, Once the person who has a dementia goes through a certain door, they're almost in a dreamlike state unless they get up. They get upset. They go down, but the caregiver is the person that has to deal with the aftermath of whatever they do, 24/7, 365, moment to moment.
And it is, and the other crucial part is, how does the caregiver take care of himself, or how do the caregivers take care of themselves, which is so crucial. And Dr. Oz, I've also thought about your incredibly busy schedule that you have to manage, and I've been wondering, how do you sustain your energy through all this?
I've never thought that it was about managing energy. It's much more about managing time. And that's not right, though. It's actually the opposite, right? Because everyone's worried about the time pressure they're on, but if the things you're doing give you energy, then you'll actually do what you are set out to do without ever thinking about the time that passes. So I make sure that the tasks that I accept will give me some chi, some life force, at least in part. Not everything is going to be fun in life. It's not as glamorous as it seems, everybody. You have to work your tail off. There are plenty of late nights where you're slaving by the oil lamp, trying to make the pieces of the puzzle of your life fit together. But enough of the time, it gives me energy that I wake up in the morning excited about what I'm about to do. And I think that's a lesson that all of us are told when we're young. That's why when my kids were trying to figure out what careers to pursue, I always would tell them, just do something you absolutely love.
Love, yeah.
That's
amazing.
If you love it, you'll be really good at it. And if you're really good at it, you'll make
money.
I agree.
That's 100% true. That's 100% true.
It follows that. It's almost counterintuitive, as opposed to, I've got to do something.
Yeah, if you're dreading it, you're not going to be successful.
You know, go ahead.
But to give you a tactic for energy, just people probably expect me to give them some specifics. I don't drink any caffeine in the morning. I drink a lemon juice of water to get my day started. I've always felt caffeine's a bit of a lie. It tastes good. Yeah, everyone loves coffee, but it's withdrawing energy from your energy bank. But just like a credit card, it's not depositing any energy there. So ultimately, you run out of energy in the mid-afternoon usually. So then you have to give yourself energy, and the best way to do that is with carbohydrates. That's why people have a bewitching hour in the evening when they start to eat foods they don't really like because they're so worn out. So no caffeine early in the morning. I have my first meal around 9. Usually it's yogurt with blueberries. And then this is a big deal. About 8 hours after I get up, I get tired, and most people do. And you should take a nap. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy. It actually works. There are many people, but Leonardo da Vinci napped all day long. If he could do it, you can do it.
Right.
Carve out 10 minutes, put your head down. You won't crave coffee, chocolate, candy, carbs, anything. Take a 10-minute nap. You'll feel energized for the second half of the day. And we are hardwired to take naps. We're supposed to get tired 8 hours after we get up.
That's really interesting. I was unaware of this. Yeah,
Is that because of hunter-gathering? Because we're out trying to not, you know, from prehistoric times, trying to figure out what we're going to eat or not have something eat us?
Exactly.
I look at life and I say basically animals only do 5 basic things. I mean, all animals have to sleep. All animals have to continue, the species have to procreate. All animals basically have to defecate. And then the other two are they have to eat and not be eaten to continue. So I guess that's the work effort, isn't it?
We're speaking of getting eaten. My producers are standing around me like they're going to club me. Because we have 15 minutes late for rehearsal, and I don't want to keep 200 people waiting.
Okay, well,
but I adore both of you. I appreciate all that you are trying to accomplish. I know it's painful. I know that the criticism can be scorching and stinging, but be brave. Be big.
Thank you so much for your time.
You helped
us. We really
appreciate
it. We
look forward to seeing you, and we can't wait to see the show.
I'm looking forward to you seeing it. Take care.
Thank you, Dr. Oz. Bye-bye.
That's an amazing situation that we have going on right now with. Here's a doctor, a man who understands medicine, understands the brain, understands the interconnectivity of how the body functions, basically told us that what we're doing is important and that more people are going to have to do it because more people are living longer and they're going to have to manage someone else or be managed.
Exactly.
You're listening to the Thank You, Dan.
And Alex Show.
We'll be back.
A good life starts at the top. A good life starts with the Thank You, Dan Show with Alex.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Thank You, Dan.
And Alex Show.
Brought to you by Maplewood Senior Living. You know, Alex, I have to tell you, after all of what's been going on in the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been crazy.
It's been unbelievable. Everyone has an opinion, and everyone gives two sides of the opinion without you or I having any input. And they don't know. They've made many, many assumptions that are just not true.
Well, I think, you know, it is a very strange issue, and I think that's really a social media problem. If you wish, you know, because I think there were so many people out there that jumped to conclusions about people or situations that they don't know,
exactly.
That they just know of. And, you know, it creates some really sticky situations.
And nasty. And I have to be candid, you know, we live in an environment now where our political discourse is anger. and mistrust and cruelty, as opposed to looking for things in a light that is more collegial, that is more corroborative. It's sad that that's happened.
Yeah, and you know, the way I've been feeling throughout this whole time now, and what is really sad is, you know, we are so used to living in this time of living a lie.
Yes.
Just about everything.
Yeah.
And I feel that, you know, being honest, when you're being honest, you know, you're being punished for it, which is really a very sad state.
I don't care what people think about me, because, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. Being in the restaurant business, where somebody buys $6 drink or whatever, they feel they can tell you their life story or judge you. You know, it's almost like the perfect example is somebody says, your mac and cheese doesn't taste like my grandmother's mac and cheese. You want to say to them, one, how many times did you eat your mac and cheese from your grandmother? If you ate it one time a week, you had 52 meals of mac and cheese.
Right.
We're doing 100 or 300 every day. So we're doing thousands. And two, you were probably eating your grandmother's mac and cheese before you knew your name. She could be making terrible mac and cheese. But that's what you're accustomed to, and you associate that mac and cheese with your grandmother and with being loved.
Right.
And that's the problem. People are judgmental, and people will, just because they are doing it, you should do it. And we've seen this. A perfect example is you have to honor your vows in terms of my relationship with you and with my wife and my wife B. Well, how do you know I'm not? I'm taking care of her. Thank you. She's in a state of, right now she's a four-year-old. I could have institutionalized her years ago, but I'm not. And I kept a promise to her. I kept a promise to tell our story. Mm-hmm. We wrote a book about that.
I know.
A New York Times bestseller book
about
that.
It's called Before I Forget.
Thank you.
And it includes a lot of information of what, you know, your previous life before B's diagnosis, and then what happened after the diagnosis, and how you were talking about going into the future with this Alzheimer's diagnosis.
Exactly.
And the Alzheimer's decline, you know, which is really, but people don't know about that, and people don't know about, which is almost like, it almost became like a renewed vow between the two of you after this diagnosis and this change of, health.
Alex, it's, you know, I have people calling me up who understand this, who've been in what I call the club.
Yes,
you know, 5.5 million people with the disease, at least two people for everyone Alzheimer's victim, 10 million people, 10,000 a week are coming online, 20,000 are being caregivers every single week. And what they tell me, not the ones that are saying what's going on is wrong, they said, bless you. And they call you a heroine because you decided to commit yourself in a relationship with me, knowing, did I ever lie to you about anything?
Never, never.
You were always honest.
You always laid out to me, what your relationship is now and what B is going through and what you're going through as a caregiver. And, you know, the thing, Dan, that I can understand this whole situation is that it is a very thought-provoking situation that people are now reading about. They see a little bit about, in videos and whatnot, or on Facebook. And it definitely pulls them out of their comfort zone.
Yes.
You know, and that is, I think, what people are mostly struggling with, because most people like to live their life in a little box. You know, they have their little life, and then, you know, they have their routines, and they don't step out of their routines, and then all of a sudden, something like what we released, you know, came across them, and they're shook up.
Yeah.
Because now, all of a sudden, they have to think about something that they either didn't want to think about or that they had thought about, but they wouldn't address it.
Yes.
Sweep it under the rug.
Make believe it doesn't exist.
Make believe it doesn't exist because it's a, you know, it's a provoking conversation and so forth. So I can understand it on one hand, but, you know, our goal is exactly that.
To make people aware.
To make people aware.
And let's be real. Let you know, our show, the Thank You Dan and Alex show, is about real reality. This is not made up reality. This is not WWF where we put people in places that are uncomfortable. It's about real reality. And people are uncomfortable dealing with real stuff.
Right.
You're listening to the Thank You Dan and Alex show. Alex?
Good to be in the studio with you, Dan.
Always great to be with you.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
A good life starts at the top. A good life starts with the Thank You Dan Show with Alex.
Welcome back to the Thank You Dan and Alex Show.
Good to see you. Good to be with you. Always good to be in the studio talking about things that matter. You know, our show is about living the good life, but also how to make whatever you're dealing with, hopefully, a little better.
Yes, Dan. And also, I want to mention that this show is brought to you by Maplewood Senior Living.
Maplewood has been a true partner. It's one of those companies that actually I investigated because at the time is I don't know if it's right or what, but when I can no longer manage the care of my
wife,
I want to make sure
To be prepared
and to be able to take her someplace that when we walk out of the door, we know that she's covered. And from all of the investigations that I've done with various assisted living facilities, this one is right up top, you know, basic state-of-the-art facility. And, you know, I just wanted to know. She's not ready yet, and I don't want her to go. But I also know the inevitability of at some point she can't be managed at home. And so I want to make sure. And that's what people don't know.
You want to make sure that she's in the best of hands. And, you know, it takes research. And it's great that you found a company that you can trust and that you know that, you know, you won't lose sleep over it should that day come.
Well, you know, the toughest thing about being a caregiver is the inevitability of that the person you're caring for, especially with a neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's and dementia, is that at one point they walk through a door that they don't return cognitively and physically, and that's a point where you have to ask for professional help.
Yeah.
And no one understood when I was going through this journey, as you have now started to really be invested in that journey with me, and I appreciate that from
also,
the bottom of my heart.
Also, with my father, you know, who had a much, much shorter journey, obviously, than B has been experiencing. But, you know, all of it is eye-opening and heartbreaking at the same time.
Well, you hit the nail right on the head. Most people have no clue about how devastating it is.
I didn't.
No.
I was honestly like I said, clueless. And you know what? If I had not had you by my side and you knew exactly what was coming at me when I told you what my father's symptoms were, and he was in Germany, and, you know, you did not hesitate to be by my side and you actually head over to Germany so that I would have some support. And you were terrific, terrific as you are with B.
Well, you know what? Look, we've both gone down, and I'm continuing to going down a path that is very, very heart-wrenching. But you're my friend. More than anything else.
We're friends.
But, you know, what most people don't know is that when I was ill and I had to have an operation and Dana had to take care of B,
you opened up your home to me and said, when you go to the doctor and you get your operation, come back and you can stay there and recuperate quietly, because I couldn't have done it at home.
Not only that, but I remember that my first question was, well, Dan, who's going to pick you up?
I said, I'll get in a cab.
I said, no, you're not. I said, no.
I'll get a motorized gurney. I'll get a motorized gurney and go down 125th Street, make a left, you know.
Yeah, right. It was the end of the summer, and I said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. I won't allow it. I will make sure to be there to pick you up, and you can stay with me for a couple of days until you get better. But, you know, so that is actually also something that brought us closer and strengthened our bond as friends.
I love you, and I care about you, but I'll tell you something that, you know, the listeners don't know. When I was in that bedroom you provided for me to stay, I woke up one night and I said to myself, wow, this woman really doesn't even know me. She knows what she has seen over a brief period of time, but she opened up her home, and I'm laying here and I was sitting up in that bedroom, and I said, she's special. And I'll never forget that, and I will always, always be in your corner, 100%. And people don't understand our relationship. You know, they can see us as a couple or see us as a couple that's involved, whatever you want to call it, because I am married. But they don't understand when someone has Alzheimer's or a major neurodegenerative disease, they're not there. And you were there for me.
Yeah, nobody, you know, could take care of you because...
I'm a handful.
No, nobody. B couldn't take care of you, and Dana had to take care of B,
right.
So you had nobody to take care of
you. And that's when our friendship solidified. I was vulnerable.
You know.
And you know what? That speaks to something that we've been working on and what we talk about when you're a caregiver. Mm-hmm. We talk about the three C's of caregiving.
Of caregiving, and yes, and that would be compassion.
You definitely have to be compassionate, and that's obviously what you were. I mean, you were, you know, not that I'm crazy or anything, but you were taking me into your home, but you sensed that I was in need. And
absolutely.
You didn't make it seem like I owed you anything or this was a tit for tat. You said, come and stay with me after the operation until you get yourself able to travel.
Right.
And
exactly,
that was 3 days.
And
I had to go back to East Hampton.
And the second C would be commitment. You know, being a caregiver takes a lot of commitment. And, you know, that's really the first decision you have to make.
Well, you were committed to your dad, traveling back and forth between Germany and the States. When I went over there and knew how much you had to do and how intricate it was to do it, and on top of that, the mere fact that although you're German, as you say, born and raised, you haven't lived in Germany in 25, 30 years.
Over 30 years, Dan. Over 30
I thought you
years.
Were just 31.
Thank you.
But, you know, to watch what you had to deal with.
It was hard. I mean, you know, although I still speak the language, I am clearly, you know, not capable of a legal German bureaucratic challenges and
there were a lot.
And tasks, of course.
Yeah.
Somebody dies, you know, that, you know, it all comes at you very quickly. And so it was hard to follow.
So that commitment that you had to not giving up and to spend 8-10 hours going through the bureaucratic process. Yeah, I always get that word wrong. Bureaucratic process was one of the things that I admired about you, and to see you in action, how focused you were. I knew you couldn't be, look, everybody at some point's alone, but I did not want you to be alone and have to deal with this all by yourself. And when
it really made all the difference. And thank you again. It made all the difference in my experience, you know, just being over there by myself and having to handle everything. So, you know, for you to be there and listen to me and give me advice on what I had to do and how I had to follow through and what the best way to do, how to do it would be. So it was a tremendous help.
Well, thank you. You know what? When you care, you share.
Right. And so that brings us to the third C, because it's about companionship.
Absolutely.
And I think that is one of the things that we have developed in our relationship so beautifully. You know, we have great companionship.
You're my first and foremost. I love you, but you're my friend, and we can talk about any and everything. We'll talk about things that are truthful, that sometimes can be hurtful in dealing with life. But you know that I'm not going to have an agenda. I'm going to give you my opinion clean.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I feel about it. I'm not even going to say, and you haven't ever heard me say, you should do this, because it's not about me telling you what to do. It's about me saying, here's what I see and here's how I feel about it. What do you think?
Right.
And that's what, and you know, it goes even deeper than that, as I'm learning, and we've been, you know, been talked about and assailed, or whatever you want to call it. I could not have been where I am today to do for what I've had to do for B without having you in my life, almost as a release valve for all of the frustrations and pressures. You know, stress comes from a lot of things, but one of the number one forms of stress is when you're a caregiver in general,
mm-hmm.
when you have to care for someone who can't take care of themselves. Now, that care is compounded by the fact that the person is not there. They don't have a brain. They, you know, some of the things we've heard about Alzheimer's that were totally inaccurate, well, it's just a lack of memory. Or somehow the person...
Yeah, and then, I mean, you hear some really...
Outlandish
comments. Or I just, on TV the other... yesterday, I heard one woman talking about Alzheimer's. And she was talking about B, apparently. She says, well, some of the things she might be forgetting. Well, she has no memory of anything.
Yeah.
She half the time, she doesn't even know her own name. Or when you ask her... or she'll say to me, have you seen B. Smith? Where is she? You know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, people don't understand what it's like. So to say, only there is, she forgot something partially? No, she has no memory.
Or, here take this for a great instance of, you know, some of these talk show hosts that don't know exactly anything about the disease. Oh, well, you know, if she, you know, she knew what she was doing, she wouldn't have you there in the house. No, she doesn't know she's even in a house. She can't even, if you say, she doesn't know where her home is.
Right.
I mean, so it's so amazing how people are going to weigh in on you. But for the caregiver, think about it. I have to have companionship. I have to have
Absolutely.
This ability. You know, this is a non-normal, in the way of everyday living, unbelievably stressful. They say caregiving for an Alzheimer's patient, the stress level is akin to the kidnapping of someone's child.
Oh, I've not heard that before, but I believe it.
And it's an everyday kind of stress. Not the child is either found alive, not found alive, but it ends at a certain point. This is prolonged, can be years or even decades of that continuous, nonstop stress.
Yeah.
And so I say to you, I'm proud of our relationship, but more importantly, you are a heroine for being able to take her under your wing and make her feel comfortable. And one other thing I need to stress is that everyone's looking at what we're doing as something out of the normal, and that's what they can't manage or handle. what I'm doing, thousands upon thousands of people are doing every day. They're finding a way to manage the unmanageable. And they're having relationships. And they keep them quiet. And you know what?
Go ahead.
I didn't want to do that. I kept hearing this talk show host on one of these, you know, chatty shows saying, well, you should have kept it on the down low. Well, I'm going to keep it...
A lot of people have said that.
...on the up high, because I don't need to do that. If I had been caught having a relationship with you with no knowledge whatsoever, then I'm a liar and a cheater. And I'm neither. I'm neither.
Right.
Every doctor that I've talked to, every psychologist that I've talked to, every neurologist that I've talked to, scientists that I've talked to that study behavior and study the brain, understand one thing. Companionship during this is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
To de-stress you, but also to keep you from possibly, through the course of this unbelievable situation, having Alzheimer's yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's
or other health problems, yeah.
Or high blood pressure or stroke.
Of course.
So I'm amazed at the level of just gross, let's just call it unawareness that exists out here. And the self-righteous judgmentalness of people out here. Our story, quite honestly, and we see it on our media, social media pages, is ripe with people telling us, Dan, you're doing a great job. Dan, I've been there.
Yeah, well, I think, Dan, you and I have realized that, you know, we have created a relationship because the way it is, because we were able to think out of the box,
mm-hmm.
outside of the box. And I think most people either can't do that or won't allow themselves to do that because they are afraid.
Or, you know, afraid. And also, Alex, they also are afraid of not just doing it, but being criticized by others.
Clearly.
You know,
criticism.
And that kills any opportunity to get above and beyond yourself and to grow.
Of course.
You know, and...
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, you can drive in the right lane of the highway at 50 miles an hour all your life. You know, I've always been driving on the left side of the highway at 90 miles an hour or so. You know, I've always thought a little bit differently and taken chances.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess that's what my life is
about. You took a chance on me when I was down, when I was sick, and I appreciate it. And if I could say there's a reward in that, it's my undying commitment and love for you.
Thank you.
And the truth be told, until you're in someone's shoes where... You don't know when up is going to happen because you can only see down. When you feel lost or when you're in a place where you can't control anyone, and that anyone is the person you love the most, that's when you need a friend. You don't need a friend during good times. You know, you need a friend when...
That's when you have most of your friends.
and they're not...
The so-called friends.
And they can share everything you have. But when you can only judge a friend over time. Not how much they have, not how much money, not what parties you go to. And I see it in real time. We're going through a test right now, but we're going to come out on this. We're going to ace it. And we're not going to have everyone, obviously, for a whole host of reasons. Some so obvious it's... You know, you don't even want to get into it, like race. But we're going to have who we are, that we're black and white, and they don't like that.
Yeah.
But we're going to have, we're going to ace this. We're going to make this, we're going to take this to another level, and we're going to make a difference. We already have made differences in tens of thousands of people. I get the cards, I get the letters, I get the emails.
Yeah, because we've sparked a conversation that, you know, most people consciously avoid, right?
Yep.
It's a conversation that is clearly taking people out of their comfort zone, and they have to,
you know, gamble with it, and it shakes them up and mm-hmm. everything else. And it's a conversation that's being put on the back burner, but I think it's a conversation that is very relevant.
And we're going to make it
very
even,
important.
Even more important. You know, compassion.
Commitment.
And companionship. Is what it takes to be a caregiver.
Exactly.
You're listening to the Thank You, Dan.
And Alex Show.
We'll be back.
From negative to positive, it takes focus. It takes the Thank You, Dan Show with Alex.
Welcome back to the Thank You, Dan.
And Alex Show.
Brought to you by Maplewood Senior Living.
An amazing company that does some of the best care for people who can't care for themselves.
Beautiful, Dan. That's so good to know, you know? And people, I hope a lot of people will real research the company.
You know, I've done my due diligence, and I know that state-of-the-art, you know, farm-to-table food facilities that I call it, if you have to be in an assisted living facility, it's like where Ralph Lauren meets good care. And so I feel very blessed to have them as our title sponsor on the Thank You, Dan and Alex Show.
I do too. That's because, fantastic. You know, we're very fortunate. Yes.
I want to know when I leave that facility, when I walk out the door, that my loved one is going to be well cared for. Now, B is not in a facility now, and I have no plans in the immediate future. But what I do know is that when that day comes, because anyone who has gone through the journey with someone with Alzheimer's knows there will come a time that you cannot manage all of their care.
Right.
And quite honestly, you know, it's going to be a tough time for me to do that. And it could have been so easy, you know, a year ago or now to just, you know, take her to a facility and leave her there.
Yes, Dan, it could have been, but that's not you. And you know, one of the things I admire most about you, that you have made that commitment to be Bee's caregiver, as Dana has, by the way. And you guys are doing a tremendous job. Bee looks gorgeous, beautiful. She's healthy, physically, she's very healthy.
That old saying, she's strong. As healthy as a horse.
Very strong. She still has her million-dollar smile. But, you know, I admire that you are keeping the integrity of your family together and alive, which is a lot of work. I know it's very hard work because I see you doing it. And but, you know, I commend you on that. It's tremendous.
Well, you know, Alex, I know how much you cared about your dad, and I was there for you during the final weeks and days.
Yes.
And anyone who's been in this situation, in this club and on this journey, completely understands what we're dealing with. And those who are compassionate, as we talked about in an earlier segment, and who understand, you know, how important it is to be committed to making sure that they're cared for, understands that it's not easy.
Right.
It's definitely not easy.
Not easy at all.
But the thing that makes the most difficult situation easier is that whole notion of companionship, which we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't stress it enough. At the end of the day, you need people and you need help and you need to be able to reach out. And that's what you did for me, and I will be forever indebted to you for that. When I needed it, not a little and not a lot, I needed it completely. And so I can't say it enough. You made a difference. So many people really die from the stress of caring for people.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, you have had so many followers on Facebook that are just, you know, completely alone and lonely in this journey of being a caregiver. And I know that you have given them a little bit of hope. And we are continuing to do this on this show. And also this year, we are going to have a lot more people call into the show.
We're going to have people call in.
Which is going to happen probably within the next week or two when we're ready to do that. And also, we will have people email us with their stories, questions, but also, you know, requests of what people would like to have addressed in our show due to their experiences. So I think that's a lot to look forward to. And we're going to get that rolling
shortly.
Very, very shortly, very shortly. We're just about preparing for that now.
Well, you know, this show has been a work in progress because...
But it's still new, too.
And it's been a delight for me to sit across a studio desk and see you there. And, you know, I'm built in a way that I'm better with someone. And the toughest thing for me has been being with B and not being with B at the same time.
Yeah.
That is, you know, and having done and achieved all of the things. So you have, you know, filled a void that I could be stroked out. I could be a whole host of things. You saved me. You helped me. And I will never forget. I will never, ever forget what you've done. And I want people to know, because the new normal, and we're going to talk about that next week, the new normal will be more people will have to have someone in their lives to help manage the unmanageable.
Exactly. Agreed. Yep.
And speaking of normal,
that's what people are not aware of.
You got it. And speaking of normal, our time is in. And normally when it's time to say goodbye, it's time to say, you're listening to the Thank You, Dan
and Alex Show.